This is the Local Action for Our Environment podcast series, brought to you by the Local Government Association.
Hello and welcome to the Local Action for Our Environment podcast, brought to you by the Local Government Association. I'm Councillor Liz Green, Vice Chair of the LGA's Improvement and Innovation Board, with lead responsibility for climate change. As you may be aware, many councils across the UK have declared a climate emergency. I'll be chairing this first training series as we delve into the climate emergency and explore how councils can effectively engage with their communities. In this episode, we'll be looking at the challenges to public engagement and how we can solve those by informing and educating our local communities. Before we kick off, do you know roughly what percentage of the measures required to meet net zero will involve at least some behavioural change? And how are you engaging and including business sector in your carbon neutral plans? While you listen to this episode, have a think about these questions and I'll check in with you again at the end. I'm very pleased today to welcome Professor Lorraine Whitmarsh, Director for the Centre of Climate Change and Social Transformations, and Chris Common, the Carbon Neutral Policy Manager at Nottingham City Council. Lorraine, let's start with you, shall we? Could you tell me a little bit about yourself and your work?
Yeah, so I'm a Professor of Environmental Psychology at the University of Bath and Director of the Centre for Climate Change and Social Transformations. And what we do in our centre is we look at the role that people play in tackling climate change, particularly in mitigating it, so reducing emissions. And we're really interested in the variety of roles that people play, from what they do in the home, how they travel, and things they do in their private life, through to things they might do in the workplace or as part of communities, or maybe as kind of leaders in various ways. So we're interested in the whole range of different roles that people play in tackling climate change.
Thanks, Lorraine. So what do you think is the current climate change knowledge gap, and how do we fill it? You know, how do we educate people on what they actually need to do for themselves?
So I think there is something of a knowledge gap still. I think what our surveys and other people's research show is that the public in general tend to underestimate the scale of the challenge ahead. I think there's still a bit of a pervasive view that we do need to change a few things and technologies might achieve a lot of the changes. But actually what we know is that at least 60% of the changes required to get to net zero are going to involve at least some degree of behaviour change. That's according to the Committee on Climate Change's recent sixth carbon budget report. And I think our work suggests it might even be higher than that, actually, because that only really accounts for the sorts of behaviour changes of private citizens. So things that you and I might do, like, you know, buying a greener type of vehicle, like an electric car, or changing our diets a bit. But actually, there's also professional behaviour change, workplace behaviour change, which probably accounts for an even higher proportion. So it is most of what we need to get to net zero will require behaviour change. And I don't think that that's widely understood. And I think there are also a few specific misperceptions. So we also find that people tend to think that things like recycling and switching off lights that you're not using will actually have quite a big environmental benefit, whereas we know that generally they're not particularly effective. Things like changing our diet, so eating less red meat and dairy, traveling less by car, flying less, those things have a much, much bigger impact, and people generally don't tend to be aware of quite how much of an impact those things have. So I think there are some misperceptions we can address through information provision. And I think more generally as well, although information deficits aren't really the biggest barrier to behaviour change, for example, take retrofitting. So we know that people's homes have to be better insulated and to sort of reduce emissions and be more energy efficient. We do need to think about the wider barriers to behaviour change in cases like that. So it isn't only that people know that they need to retrofit their home. They need to know who are the trusted tradespeople, who can they go to to install these sorts of measures? What might be the financial support available? But also, we need to make it easier and more less disruptive for people to install these things. And we know from our research, for example, people, even when they're quite keen to do these things, they're sort of put off by the inevitable disruptions. So we need to think about how can we make it easier for people, maybe when they're having change done on their home more widely, time it for those sorts of changes that they're making, make it cheaper and so on. So I think there are definitely information barriers that people have, but there are other barriers that we need to think about too.
Yeah, lots of things to think about there, Lorraine, in terms of what people can do. But we've got a finite time to change the direction that we're currently going in. So whilst people need to understand these changes and we need to make it easier for them, how can we make this real for people, that this finite amount of time that we have?
Yeah, I think there is a challenge here, because I think it's about getting the balance right between highlighting the urgency of the situation, the fact that we really do need to change on quite a short time frame, really just a matter of a few years, versus also showing it's not too late. We still have time to make a difference. And if we act, we really can tackle this. So there's a balancing act to sort of trying to make people aware this is an emergency, but not scaring them into apathy, or just, because the risk is that I think if we give people big scary messages, they'll just switch off and think, I this is too much for me to handle. So we know we have to sort of try and show people that we can still make a difference. And part of that as well is, I think, about showing how climate change will impact what we care about. So at the local level, for example, what might be the things that will change, and if we don't tackle climate change, how might this affect our family, friends, etc., things that we care about and people that we care about. But also, really importantly, I think it's about showing the co-benefits, the additional benefits of taking climate change action. So actually, probably the most effective way we can engage people is saying, well, we need to tackle climate change, but we also need to make our streets cleaner, the air cleaner. We need to make, you know, the roads safer. We need to have healthier lifestyles. We need to make these sorts of products cheaper that will improve your life and, you know, well-being. And actually talking about all those wider benefits to taking climate change action. And there are a lot of wider benefits. So it's really about, I think, emphasizing how our lives potentially could be a lot better if we take climate change action.
Yes, and you mentioned retrofitting homes. Obviously, warmer and cheaper to heat homes is a very positive step for a lot of people, which has that dual benefit. So it's quite difficult, though, to get this message across, as you've described, that, you know, the mix between not scaring people but getting them to take urgent action. So do you know of any new engagement tactics or interesting research on this educational front which could help design and inform an information or education campaign to get this message across that you're talking about?
Yeah, I would definitely recommend looking at the Climate Outreach website. They are an engagement charity that specialise in how to effectively engage the public on climate change. They have loads of resources and materials there, including visual resources. So they have a whole sort of catalogue of images that they've found through research to be really engaging on climate change. And so they're sorts of images which show people taking action, people like you and I actually making a difference. They're really positive images, they're really inspiring, and they bring climate change home to people. So that is a really great set of resources. A few years ago, Oxfam had a really interesting campaign called For the Love Of, and that did something interesting where you had to enter information on their website about something you cared about, and it could be anything from chocolate to cricket to your local area, and it would say how climate change was going to impact on that thing. And so I learned to my horror that climate change is going to threaten chocolate supplies in this country. So, you know, it really brought it home to me that we need to do something about climate change. So again, it's about kind of making this real to people, showing why this is relevant. This isn't just an issue which is something for the future, something for, you know, people that live in other countries or sort of other other decision makers. It's actually something that is relevant to us and is going to be increasingly important to us. So I think those sorts of examples, I would also maybe just flag as well some of the interesting deliberative engagement examples. So like Climate Assembly UK, some of the local citizens' juries and citizens' assemblies that have been happening around climate change. There are some really great examples around engaging at the community level to actually explore the pros and cons of different policies to tackle climate change, sometimes focusing on particular areas like transport or maybe flooding or other types of elements of climate change, but bringing together people to actually actively engage in decision making about how to tackle the issue. And so there's some really great deliberative examples out there too.
Thanks. And we do cover citizens assemblies in a different one of these podcasts with one of the councils that did it first. And if it doesn't scare everybody that the chocolate supply may run out to get them to take action, I'm not quite sure what will. So you've talked around a lot of the education and informing people and working with people. What would be your top three tips for any council to improve their education and information around climate change?
I'd say, first of all, it's important to identify who your audiences are, because they are going to be pretty diverse across, you know, the city or the area that you're working in, from, you know, private citizens, and even those are going to be very diverse from sort of higher income groups, lower income groups, more urban, more rural. So trying to understand the residential population and the needs and challenges that they have in terms of shifting their behaviour to be lower carbon. Obviously, there will be kind of business stakeholders as well, and they will have different needs and values and things that they will need to mobilise them. So understanding, identifying your audience and really understanding how to engage with them and what might be the different barriers that they will face to acting on climate change. And then targeting information and other measures to address those things. And so it might be that through sort of doing some surveying or other work to understand your audiences, you realise that maybe a significant barrier to installing insulation in homes is the disruption. So is there a measure that you could implement to actually potentially reduce the level of disruption? And so, I know some councils have looked into some of that, that Monmouthshire, for example, did some work around this. So really understanding the barriers and then targeting measures to reduce those barriers, and targeting information to resonate with what people care about as well. So it may be that people are really worried about the air pollution in their area, or maybe the number of accidents on the road, and the fact that there are, you know, children walking to road to schools that in areas that are not safe. And so, you know, achieving reductions of road of car use in those areas will help address those concerns, as well as reducing emissions. So it's about looking for those co-benefits as well. And as I've touched on as well, I think involving people as much as possible in decision making. So we know at the local level, things like low traffic neighbourhoods can be quite divisive. And so while we know that they do achieve significant emission reductions, they also improve quality of life and air quality and reduce accidents and have business benefits and so on. They still can be very polarising amongst communities. And the best way in which we can sort of move past this political impasse between different groups and communities is to engage them at the earliest stage in how can we change the area to improve quality of life for you, as well as tackling the transport problems that we have in your area. So early and consistent engagement using lots of different methods is a really key thing, I think, to do as well.
Thanks, Lorraine. And we do talk about how to engage diverse populations on another one of these podcasts. So to the listeners, you'll have to listen to the whole series to hear all of the information. But I'm very interested in the way that you said about the targeting of information, Lorraine. And I just wondered if you could go into the impact, why that is so impactful compared to the general broadcasting.
Yeah, absolutely. So what we know from kind of psychological studies is that people tend to gravitate towards information which reinforces their existing views, and they tend to ignore information which challenges them. They have these kind of biases and these filters, which something called confirmation bias, for example. We just look for information which confirms what we already think. And we agree with people that are like us as well. You know, we look for people that sort of share our values and that seem to be kind of similar types of people. We listen to them. And so that means it can be quite difficult to sort of break out of the groups that we tend to listen to, and to listen to information which might be quite challenging. And so we need to adapt our messaging and the messengers to be people who are maybe part of these groups that might be harder to engage with, but also to adapt the message itself to be talking in ways that are more consistent with what that group of people might care about. And so, you know, for people that are concerned about air quality in their neighborhood, that's probably quite easy to say, hey, this climate change measure is going to significantly improve air quality for you and address your concerns about sort of childhood asthma and whatever else it is that they're worried about. So as soon as you've got an understanding about what it is that group cares about, you can potentially stop talking about climate change if they don't care about climate change, and if they're maybe skeptical about climate change, you just talk about the thing that they care about that happens to also achieve emission reductions. So it can sometimes be about not even mentioning climate change, but actually talking about things that they really do care about, so that you're on their wavelength, you're moving away from this filter that they otherwise have.
Yeah, that makes absolute sense what you're talking there, Lorraine. Quite difficult to do, but thank you so much for all of that. So we're going to move on to Chris. Chris, could you just tell us a little bit about who you are, what you do at Nottingham?
Okay. Hi, everyone. My name is Chris Common, and I'm the Carbon Neutral Policy Manager at Nottingham City Council. I head up a smallish team at the moment that is dedicated to delivering the council's key policy, which is to become carbon neutral by 2028, which essentially would make us the first city in the UK to do that if we can achieve it. So we're hugely ambitious that we've now got 7 years to do this. So talk about accelerating things. We know that in spades in Nottingham. Personally, I'm born and bred in the city, so I personally, it's a delight to be able to do something like this to affect the city in which I was born and bred. So I've been at the City Council since 2013, working in all sorts of strategic and corporate management projects. So this one's just a walk in the park compared to some of the other stuff I've done. So
you can now tell us exactly how Nottingham have done it, as you've cracked the whole problem by the sound of it, Chris. But seriously, though, the councils obviously need to communicate about climate change, and we've heard from Lorraine about how to make it effective and engaging. So what is it that you are doing in Nottingham to help people make those informed decisions that we've heard from Lorraine they need to be making for the behavioural change that needs to happen?
Sure. Like the rest of the world, we set our goal back in March 2020, just when the pandemic hit. And fortunately, we did a certain amount of public engagement and consultation prior to that to put our action plan together, the action plan to deliver the carbon neutral agenda, and we had some really good responses from that. And it was, as you suggested, Lorraine, about making sure that we got as many voices as possible, so it wasn't about the established climate pressure groups examples, but it was all from as many parts of the community as we could get. So that was the initial consultation on our action plan, and it did make some fairly major changes. We didn't have a theme around sort of nature and biodiversity. I know that sounds strange, but there was certainly a cry from the public to strengthen that area, which we did. And we do need to do some more work on that, of course. But so as the pandemic hit, we knew that face-to-face engagement was going to be difficult. We also knew that the city centre, if you remember back at the time, was practically deserted. So it was very difficult to get sort of messages out that were confusing with, shall we say, the distancing messages and things like that. So we've relied fairly heavily on social media, on Twitter, Facebook predominantly. And in August, we did a campaign which we called 28 for 28, which was essentially setting the community and public of 28 different challenges, which were very family orientated. So it wasn't about, as you mentioned before, about hitting them hard with the scary stuff. It was about doing those small things that were family. It was about, for instance, collecting 28 different leaves in your local park, or walking for 28 minutes. And these were set by a variety of local groups, say, for instance, the Wildlife Trust, or our healthcare trust did a thing about eating differently. So there was that sort of level of engagement was aimed very much at the families and things like that. And as we've moved on into that, we've got we've replicated that every 28th of every month. We set another challenge and so on. You see that we play on the 28th quite a lot. And we've got all sorts of other things that we're doing as well. We're doing some focus groups. We're working with Nottingham Trent University on developing a regular focus group process, which looks at the different ranges of in society, say the difference between what people of a different age think about climate change and things like that. So we're starting to unravel some of the issues that we have in the city, or difference of opinions that we have in the city. And as you may or may not be aware, Nottingham's, as most cities have, got high levels of deprivation. So we're looking at ways of how do we engage better with people who are in circumstances that are more challenging. And as we know, some of the worst effects of climate change do tend to affect those people in those sort of vulnerable situations, such as flood risk or heat or jobs or something like that. So we're doing a lot of work to understand that. And I think that goes back to the point you made, Lorraine, about understanding our audience. We know a lot about the city, but not just our residents, but our businesses and our big organisations, two big universities with best part of 40,000 students every year in the city. And so we're trying, we are engaging, and as we come out of lockdown, whether that's for another day, I'm sure, but it's how do we get our messages out there that aren't, as you say, not scary, not, they're meaningful to the way that people live their lives. And that's one of the things we've been very strongly been doing in Nottingham. It's not just about getting a colourless, odourless gas out of the atmosphere. It's about that direct effect on people's lives. What will Nottingham look like in 2028? One of our Nottingham Contemporary, which is an arts gallery in the city, are doing a project exactly like that in, look like a bit more sci-fi, but there's a lot more sort of stuff around how the city could look in 10 years time. And predominantly it looked like what it did when we had our first lockdown, you know, a lot less traffic, a lot more people walking, a lot more people. So getting those messages across and saying what a nicer place Nottingham will be because we've reduced our carbon emissions. So it's definitely not about just having those sort of dry council meetings or having posters around the city. We're trying every possible sort of communications channel that we've got at our disposal. And we are looking at interactive maps as well. There's a system we can use that can develop where people can put their ideas about what could happen in the city on a map. Just put a little dot on like a Google Maps, and you tell us your idea about changing a road junction, or you know, a little pop-up planter on the corner of the street or something like that. And that level of stuff, that level of engagement, we find is really, really important, as well as all the big stuff. You know, building, putting solar panels in and electric vehicle charging points, that's all well and good. But I think, as I think the tone of the discussion here is around changing people's attitudes and behaviours. And that's absolutely predominantly our focus, and let all the infrastructure stuff happen as well.
Yeah, as a councillor, I have to say, I'm absolutely shocked that people don't want to come and sit in our council meetings and hear us waffle on for hours on end. So, you know, I have to change my opinion on that. So you've got these campaigns playing on the number 28 to keep that in people's minds. But what's been their reaction to it? Have they engaged with it? Have there been some groups that have engaged and others? And how are you learning to adapt it over the time, this tagline of 28 for 28?
Yeah, we had a fantastic response to the targeted campaign. We had what we wanted to see was people's engagement as well, to give proof, if you like, they were doing it. So we were delighted to get, I mentioned about the leaf collection, we got people sending in photos of, they put it into collages. Another of the challenges was with a song. We wanted people to compose a song, and one of our local music studios edited it and put it a backing track to it. And we had a poem that was a competition. And yeah, the response was fantastic. So that actually spurred us on to do the monthly 28 day challenge. And as well, we did a repeat of it at Christmas, called Christmas Greenings. And that had a very similar thing. I think we know we can do more, but it was around being circumstantial to the situation the country and the world were in at the time. But having people on that, I think you use the expression, Lorraine, about keeping it real. And I think that's what we're trying to do. We sort of know that we're just going to frighten people to death. I know it's scary, the stuff that if we don't get this right, but I think to get people engaged, there was really strong support for what we were doing, Liz. But I think we can do more. I know we can. But, for instance, we've got a Twitter feed, and we've got over 3,000 followers on it, which I know doesn't sound a lot out of a city of 300,000. But there's 3,000 people who are following what we do and contributing actively as well. So.
No, I mean, that's great. And what would you say were the lessons that you have learned from it? Obviously, this is an ongoing campaign. You will be adapting it and changing it. And I'm particularly interested in the different people that you've got in Nottingham and how they're reacting. Is there a better take up for your campaigns and education from one particular grouping and another one you're still struggling to get the message over to, those diverse communities that Lorraine was talking about, that you'll have, you know, throughout Nottingham. So can you just go through a little bit on that?
Obviously, the one of the downsides of Twitter is you don't know who those people are. There's no way of knowing what their, you know, demographic, economic situation is. So we wouldn't be able to tell who was particularly engaging with us. The only way was some, let's say there was photographic evidence, but that's fairly anecdotal, of course. So we are trying to understand better. We haven't quite got there yet, Liz, in terms of knowing those different demands or interests from the different parts of our community. One of our councillors has set up an Asian climate action group in his particular ward. And that seems very active as well. And I'm in conversations to see how we can use that to spread to the rest of the city. So I think it's really important to understand those differences, and the engagement levels are different. But I would say that at the moment that's work in progress, Liz. I don't think we're fully aware of what it is. We know we're targeting young people because, hey, there's no surprise, those young people will be the grown-ups of the future. Certainly by 2028, our 10-year-olds will be 18. So we are doing some work with our schools. We're doing lots of sort of targeted work around how do we get under the skin of schools, bearing in mind a lot of our schools are academies. I'm sure they are in your area as well. So that makes a slightly different consideration. But getting to young people is absolutely key, I think, in the city. And we're quite a young city demographically as well. A lot of students, as I said, but young people are the answer. I know that sounds hugely cliched, but it really is in this case. So, but we need to do more with our young people. But we've only been, actually, our action plan only started a year ago. So we're only actually a year into this, even though it seems like we've been doing it a lifetime, really. But.
No, I was going to say, I mean, I think part of the problem is that we're all towards the beginning of our action plans. So, Chris, can you sort of give us any inkling on the results of this? Because, you know, this is about public engagement. Sure. But what we need is a result at the end of it. We, you know, Nottingham wants to be carbon neutral by 28. We all want to reduce our carbon, the carbon outputs. So how's that actually going?
To actually define the impact of these things on, which is relatively short scale, isn't straightforward. We do rely on, for instance, the government figures on emissions that are produced annually, and they were only just produced a few weeks ago or a couple of weeks ago. We've seen average reductions in carbon emissions in Nottingham compared to the rest of the city. We're not seeing any great shift yet. I put the emphasis on yet, because those figures, as you probably know, are from 2019. So they're not even, you know, they're not current to the time that we're in now. So this is, if you like, those figures that are, there's official figures for the city emissions, are before we started the more intensive work on our carbon emission reduction and offsetting work. So next year will be 2020 figures, if you see what I mean. And we would hope that we would start to see some quite significant acceleration. But what we're seeing is average declines around about 3.5% reductions. But that's the same for the rest of the country. But Nottingham is a core city. I don't know if you know that Nottingham is a core city. Nottingham is showing the highest per capita reductions of any core city. So, but that's historical as well. So we're not getting too carried away that traditionally as a city, we've been pretty good at this. But we need to get an awful lot better. And one of the stats, which is a little bit alarming, is that to reach our 28 neutral position, we need to be reducing our carbon emissions by best part of 20, 22, 23% a year. So 3% reductions aren't going to get us anywhere near it. So you can see the acceleration we need to make is quite significant. So that's an overall sort of measure of the changes that are making. And as I say, as yet, it's about Twitter followers, it's about Facebook followers, it's about numbers of people that will come to our focus groups. So as yet, getting a nice, neat measure of our impact isn't easy to do. We're going to be doing a survey later in the year. So we're going to be asking people about, you know, what do you know about carbon neutral? And then do the survey again next year and compare the percentages. So we would hope that by 2022, there's a significant more percentage of the people and demographically we'll look at those figures, break them down to see if is that the same for a particular community or is it different. So we're not quite there yet, but we will have some better data on the differences, Liz. That's what we're trying to get to.
No, that's really interesting, and thank you Chris for that. So Chris, we've talked about the resident population of Nottingham and how you're reaching out to different groups. What about the businesses?
Sure. Again, hugely important part of the city, both independent sector and nationals and multinationals are in the city. At the last count, there's roughly 10,000 businesses in this that exist. We've got some major employers such as Boots, Experian, Capital One, and some large employers of the civil service with the HMRC based in the city, I think 2,000 or 3,000 people. We've also got one of the fifth largest hospital trust in the country as well. So the NHS being our biggest employer in the city, as most places are. And engaging with them is hugely important. And what we've done, Liz, is we've engaged with some of the business groups, such as the Chamber of Commerce. We've got other sort of targeted groups. There's a city centre businesses group called Nottingham Bid, and we've got all sorts of marketing sort of things, and we've engaged with those about the best way to do this. And we came up with a relatively simple campaign called We Support CN28. And that's essentially is we ask a business to pledge to contribute to the reductions in carbon by fairly sort of generally sort of saying, well, what sort of things are you doing? You know, we're encouraging our staff to be lift chair, or we've put solar panels on our roof or something like that. And for that, we then can start using a simple logo that we've devised. And that logo they can use in shops on, you know, a sticker on the window in a shop, or it could be on a letterhead in a business or on an email signature. But to get that sort of resonance that they're all part of a bigger thing, that from the small solicitors in the street corner who's probably just got 2 or 3 staff, right up to, as I say, Boots with 2 or 3,000 staff. So it's getting that involvement right across and visible involvement that they're part of the community of the city.
That's great. Lorraine, have you got any thoughts on the business work that they're doing?
Yeah, I just wanted to sort of say, I think this is a really powerful way of creating a sense that things are changing, that actually norms are shifting. So one of the things that we know is that actually a really powerful influence on people's behaviour is what other people are doing. So we just look around us and think like, what's the right thing to do here? What's the normal thing? We sort of try and fit in. And it's all very subconscious. So we don't like to think that we're sheep, but we sort of are all a little bit sheepy in our behaviour. And so we know that one of the best ways we can change behaviour is to use and harness social norms. And so I think what Chris is describing is really exciting, is that actually the more you can very visibly show that there is a movement here, that all of the, you know, the high street is gradually changing, employers are changing, residents are changing, you know, with whether it's with stickers or with just actually seeing people act in different ways, the more we can create this sense that this is the new normal, actually, that low carbon behavior is normal, and this is how we do things now. So I think that, just to sort of say, I think this is a really great thing that we need to do more of.
That's great, thanks for that. And you're right, we all do like to not necessarily stand out for the crowd for the wrong reasons, only for the right reasons. So Chris, what would be your top tips to help for other councils that are maybe slightly behind where Nottingham is?
At the risk of sounding lazy, I think what Lorraine said was absolutely spot on about knowing your audience and targeting your engagement activities to your particular communities. But also, I think it is about creating that sense of togetherness. I think it is about, we've said this and I get bored of saying it, this isn't a council agenda, this is a city agenda. So for us to engender that right across the whole spectrum of the city is where we want to be. And if it's helped by having a simple but a consistent logo, that it's not a council logo, it's a city logo. So I think it is about that, generating that movement across the city where it becomes, oh yeah, we're be proud of it. Nottingham's always done things slightly differently from the rest of the country, and we're playing on that a little bit. You know, we've had Brian Clough and we've had sort of, you know, Alan Sillitoe and all these sort of like rebels. And we want to do that. We want to sort of be proud of what we're doing, be innovative, be creative, but at the same time, realistic as well. But inclusive and making sure that it's not got by everybody. We know that. But if people start to look over their shoulders and go, well, they're doing that, or that business is, well, they've signed up to that, I want a piece of that. And also that in itself creates a pressure, I think, Lorraine, you were alluding to, in terms of that sort of peer challenge that will start to come about. As somebody goes into a shop and goes, oh, I see that you're part of this We Support campaign, but the shop next door isn't. You know, that sort of thing might start to spur some sort of marketing benefits and business benefit, as well as some personal benefit that I'm proud to come from Nottingham because we're going to go for this sort of thing. So I think engendering that, and I know councils are really good at that, sort of developing their own communities and spurring them on. So that is probably my top tip, is make it that it's about the community, not just about the council. But I know some targets are just about the council, but I say not in Nottingham, we're going to go for it. So
a great tip there. And at the LGA, we're firm believers in the different places, different solutions for different places.
Absolutely.
All council areas are different and have different challenges, but that we can learn from each other and adapt elements of what Nottingham or other councils are doing in our own areas. Thank you. And this brings this episode to a close. At the beginning of the episode, I asked whether you knew roughly what percentage of the measures required to meet net zero will involve at least some behavioural change. I hope you picked up that this be around 60%. Throughout the episode, we've been talking about residents and their engagement, but also how we engage and include our business sector in your carbon neutral plans, and that you have picked up on some of the tips on this. But if not, maybe give the podcast another listen. Thank you so much for listening to the Local Action for Our Environment podcast. This episode was presented by myself, Councillor Liz Green, and produced by the Local Government Association. Many thanks to our guest speakers today, Professor Lorraine Whitmarsh and Chris Common. This podcast forms part of the LGA Sector Support Programme available to councils to support their work on combating climate change. To learn more about the climate crisis and the LGA's Sector Support Programme, resources and materials will be linked in our show notes. You can also find out more on the support pages of the LGA website at local.gov.uk and by signing up to our free monthly climate change e-bulletin. Thank you again for listening. Please do share this podcast with your friends and colleagues, and we look forward to welcoming you again next time.